It is critical you pay attention at this time. The following program is being broadcast to all fans of Nova and for the preservation of the Zandarian homeworld's culture. I am the world mind and I am turning control over to my human host.
Welcome to a new episode of Xandar Radio. I'm Doug Smith, also known online as Nova64, and I run the Nova Prime page at novaprimepage.com. In this latest episode, the Learn More in Studio 64 segment will have a new roundtable session as Corey Don and I start our look at the second New Warrior series. So I'll get started, and I'd like to thank you again for listening and following the show. If this is your first time listening, welcome. I hope you enjoy it and will become one of the champions of Xandar Radio by following or subscribing to the podcast on your preferred platform. It's now time again for Nova Trivia. I'll ask a question and give the answer at the end of the program. This month's question is, in Jerry Duggan and Dustin Weaver's Infinity Gauntlet series, Eve Bakian Nova had the ability to give anyone she chose the abilities of a Nova Corps member. How was she able to achieve this? Before we go to the Nova Newsroom, I want to dedicate this episode to a Nova fan we lost recently. Andy Mokler was a big fan of Rich Rider Nova, especially of the original series. He enjoyed sharing his thoughts on Nova with us fellow Nova fans in the Nova message board on Facebook. Andy was also a gifted artist and often expressed his love for the character through his work. His contributions to Nova fandom will be definitely missed, and I send my deepest condolences to his family. We'll be back in a moment.
The Nova Newsroom.
For our news segment, I'll start with the comics. Sam Alexander Nova has been making appearances in the Devil's Reign miniseries. So far, he has appeared in issues 4 and 5. Sam also appears in the tie-in issue, Devil's Reign, Villains for Hire, number 3. These are minor appearances, but it's good to see the young Nova getting some panel time. And thanks to Tom Brennan for letting me know of these appearances. Thanks, Tom. In other product news, Fantasy Flight Games will be releasing a Nova expansion pack for its Marvel Champions, The Card Game. This set of 15 physical cards will be available in May. However, a link to pre-order the pack is available in the news section on novaprimepage.com, or it can be ordered through your local comic shop. The Nova expansion pack is listed for $17. Let's take a look at Topps' latest Nova digital cards in its Marvel Collect app. Rich Rider Nova appears on a new card representing the letter N in the alphabet set. Unlike last month's red card, this one is green. He is also on 6 of the new 2022 base set. Same art for each card, but with different colored borders. Rich is also in the background of the Moon Knight cards in the same set. And in a fun twist, the evil version of Nova from What If number 15 appears on a vintage panel card. As always, if you're interested, images of the items mentioned in this news segment can be found at novaprimepage.com. Coming up is the Learn More in Studio 64 segment, which features a roundtable session as we look at the second New Warrior series by Jay Ferber.
Learn More in Studio 64.
Welcome to a new edition of Learn More in Studio 64. I'm joined by Corey Blake and Don Lund, and we're going to take a look at the second volume of New Warriors. Hey, guys.
Hello.
Hey.
So the second New Warriors series, began in 1999 by Jay Ferber and Steve Scott. And this was released right around the time of third Nova series. There's sort of kind of an overlap. And so, this series ended up being kind of a short run, 10 issues. And we're going to be covering the first 5 issues, including the special Zero issue. The Zero issue was released with an issue of Wizard Magazine. Wizard Magazine, if you're old enough, once upon a time, information was disseminated through print magazines and newspapers. This is an archaic form of communication that no longer exists. But yeah, Wizard Magazine was really one of the dominant voices of comics in the 90s, really sort of, I guess, modeled sort of like maybe like Entertainment Weekly or something like that, like really kind of like a pop magazine kind of a thing. And every once in a while, they do a special issue. And there was an Avengers special that Wizard Magazine released, and it was packaged with this Zero New Warriors number zero issue. They did these little zero issues all the time, and it's kind of promotional things. But this was sort of a prequel or prelude to the series by the creative team. And yeah, it's kind of like this snapshot of checking in on all the members. This is really the first look we have of the team since the first volume was canceled. I guess except for little cameos here and there and a guest spot in an issue of Avengers that Kurt Busiek and George Perez had done. But this was really kind of the first real check-in. It's a short issue. It's really just I think it's like 16 pages or less, maybe. There's a little sketchbook kind of in the back that we see the character designs for the new book, which is kind of neat. But yeah, what do you guys think of this little sort of kind of roving camera kind of going around the city and around the country, checking in on these characters?
I thought it was really well done. I thought it was something that made me really look forward to the release of the upcoming series. I mean, obviously, all three of us were Nova/New Warrior fans, so it was pretty easy. I'm part of their target audience. Yeah, Wizard Magazine. So it was kind of a big deal. So it was a big deal for New Warriors fans to see a New Warriors Zero show up with their Wizard subscription in its own little plastic baggie. But yes, as a look, it was a great look back because you start off with Rage and he's talking to a classroom and he's flashing back and talking about these things. And for Steve Scott, a new artist breaking in at the time. And I think as we talked a little bit before we got started, he was a fireman. So his dream was to do comics also. So this was kind of fun for him taking his part-time project of art and seeing it come to life here in this issue. Cause I think he did a great job. He kind of showed the different costumes like Nova had and kind of almost aped the styles a little bit of Derek Robertson and some of the other artists that happened before, showing all these different scenes right out of other comic books. So really cool. And, you know, leading into some of the story elements that Corey will get into in a moment, but I liked it a lot. What'd you think, Doug?
Yeah, you know, I don't think we appreciate what an artist does in terms of storytelling sometimes. And the way that he was able to basically sum up all these different chapters of the characters basically in one page each, I thought was really good. You don't see that so much anymore. And rereading this made me appreciate it a lot more. So yeah, I really liked it.
Yeah, each like page or two focuses on one character. And really the only two cast members that interact are Namorita and Nova. Everybody else is sort of like they're doing their own things and we're just checking in on them. And so yeah, you're right. It really does kind of focus on one character a page or two at a time. A couple of new characters, one brand new character and another that's new to the New Warriors. Really kind of like compact few pages here. Yeah. The art, Steve Scott was great. Like I mean, just that first panel and page with Rage, this big guy Rage just towering over these students, like fit into this, you know, barely fits into the classroom. And he's basically giving kind of like, you know, kind of a not a book report because it's not a book, but he's giving this like, you know, project report of the history of the New Warriors to these class students that he's now attending this special school for boys, Oak Ridge School for Boys. And yeah, we get kind of a synopsis of the entire New Warriors first series. And then we see Robbie also in school. And so, yeah, he's kind of plotting to put the team back together. And then we see Namorita fighting Orca, one of the Submariner villains, big hulking whale type character. And then she gets, you know, she's they're fighting, and then Nova comes flying in and takes him out. And then their tension remains from the solo series. So this is kind of taking place about halfway through the Nova series. And at this point, they have not made amends. And so this is kind of picking up a little bit of the thread where Namorita, who had previously been blue-skinned and more Atlantean looking, sort of was shedding her skin and was very gross. And Nova kind of freaked out and didn't support her at that moment. And then Namorita's skin kind of shed. And so she's here back still in her classic look. And yeah, she's been giving Nova the cold shoulder. because of that. And so that kind of still remains here. And then we get a glimpse at Turbo, who is one of the members of the last half of the first volume. And she's mourning the death of her friend, Michael Jeffries, who was the other Turbo. There were two Turbos sharing a costume, basically. And he died at the end of that first volume. And so she's mourning him. And then we are introduced to Trey Rollins, who is a brand new character. This is his first appearance. And he's walking home from school and he discovers this Greek breastplate in the sort of a ruins of a abandoned building. And then we have Chris Bradley, who is, he will take the name, Trey Rollins will become Aegis, and Chris is going to become Bolt. He debuted in X-Men Unlimited. He's kind of an X-Men character and was a sort of a supporting character of Maverick's solo series, Maverick, which Maverick is a spinoff of a Wolverine story thread. Chris Bradley has the Legacy Virus, which is at the time a big thread in the X-Men books of basically an analog of AIDS, where basically this virus kills mutants and it makes their powers go out of control and burns them out basically and kills them eventually. And Chris at the time had relocated to Florida under a fake name with his family because they were being harassed by a anti-mutant organization. And he is now deciding, never mind, I'm going back to New York City and I'm going to be a superhero. I'm done hiding. He's taking the bus to New York City, and that's to be continued next series, or the next issue rather, when the proper series begins. To be Nova relevant, what did we think of the Nova scene here?
Nova relevant, I would say they did well. Jay and Steve did a really good job, I think, overall, personally, because I was interested. They were including elements, as you pointed out, Corey, from Nova 1 of Nova Volume 3. They were, so Nita and him were still fighting. So right there you have, okay, it's tied in. It's directly tied in with current history. We get to see on the cover of this issue a brand new costume, which would be very controversial in the early ages of internet flame wars. So there were a lot of negative feedback on some of the look on the cover. But actually within the issue, we get the traditional look and we get Nova as he's showing up in his current series. We don't get to actually see the official change until the next issue. But the sketchbook, I don't know, there was a sketchbook in the back. I don't know if people get their hands on this issue, which shows Nova in his traditional look and a couple ideas that he was working through for the new costume, including a cape. And so if you can, you know, Nova in it rich with a cape, I don't know, but it's fascinating to look at and some of the concepts. The one thing, though, you would think that these guys as Nova fans would understand, because they kind of took the star from the helmet as the main thing on the chest versus the three pods that represented the three surviving elements of Xandar, which is, you know, one of the key things I think the Nova Xandarian thing should kind of always be a part of the costume somewhere in there, not just the Nova star. But I liked it. It was a great introductory issue. It was a really strong start, I thought, for the new crew. I love mythical elements in the comics. So I like the introduction of Aegis. I like the addition of Bolt. And I like Turbo. Of all the costume changes, I kind of liked Turbo's update the best. What'd you think, Doug?
Yep, agreed. I like the whole issue as a whole. The fact that it was introduced in a wizard, I think it was a great introduction issue to new readers who would be coming on, who maybe didn't know that much about the New Warriors. For us fans, we got new stuff too. We got new characters and we got caught up on what everybody had been doing up to this point. So yeah, really, really good issue. I enjoyed that.
Yeah, I agree too. As far as, you know, the costume change, it was definitely a controversy at the time. And from what I recall at the time, I believe it was sort of either editorially enforced or maybe a marketing, the marketing department maybe compelled them to do it, but they tried to make the best of it. And Jay even did an admirable job of trying to, in story, make a good excuse for it, as did Eric Larson actually in the solo series, which we talked about in the previous episode. But yeah, the sketchbook is really fun and neat to look at these sketches. The Nova scene, yeah, they definitely picking up on threads there. Nova's concerned about his reputation and the tension between them still there. Rage, actually, I believe, was intended to be on the team, and that's why he's actually in that first scene. But again, editors decided he shouldn't be on the team. And so yeah, let's get on to issue one. This is really where the team actually comes together, and sort of classic, sort of borrowing from the first issue, the first series rather, where they come together due to a big Fantastic Four villain. And similarly on this issue, in the first series, it was Terex. And here they come together due to Blastar from Annihilation Zone, sorry, Negative Zone rather, which actually does have a connection to the Annihilation Wave, which we'll see in a few years. But yeah, this team, this is kind of a fun gathering of heroes, kind of a, you know, sort of old school kind of classic impetus to bring characters together and form a team. Speedball wants Firestar and Justice to be on the team, but they are still on the Avengers at the time and don't want to sort of be on both teams, so they decline. But otherwise, yeah, the team, despite some reluctance by some of them, they do come together after some recruiting by Robbie. What did you guys think of this issue?
I guess, yeah, leading right into, because we got to take it from zero. So we were, you know, in looking forward to and trying to figure out how everything was going to get together. I really liked, yeah, how Speedball was the glue. And I loved his opening scenes with Boomerang. And it was funny. So, you know, someone stops him in the mall to thank him for saving the day and taking out Boomerang. And she's like, where are the rest of the New Warriors? And that great opening line for the big splash page is the New Warriors don't exist, right? So that's a great opening. It's a fun way. I thought our writer, Jay Ferber, did a really good job of, if you were a fan of New Warriors, if you loved anything about Volume 1, you'd be cheering, I think, at this point. I think a lot of New Warrior fans were. It's like, you know, that Speedy's going to save the day, and he's going to put this thing back together. So it's one of those extra size, bonus size issues. So it's got extra pages. It's a big, long issue. Starts off, so you get to throw in a lot of extra detail in an extra size issue. They used every page, every panel. And too good effort, I thought. What'd you think, Doug?
Yeah, this was one of those classic, let's get the band back together type of issues. And I think this is where we start to see the costume changes. Speedy makes himself a costume change. Namorita comes in with the new white costume. It's a nice reason for Rich to be going, oh, you know, I need one too. So I think it is proof that Rich isn't a, you know, fashion designer or anything like that. But at least there's a story reason to it. And Jay Ferber had said in an interview that, like you guys had said as well, it really wasn't him and Steve Scott didn't want to change Nova's costume. Jay said he was okay with Speedball and Namorita's changes because they weren't that major of change, but they really resisted doing the Nova costume because they liked what he had, but editorial made them do it anyway. And like you said, I think they did the best they could with being forced to do that.
Yeah, it's sort of coming together is a lot of fun. And you know, the big fight scene, they all kind of combine their powers and take them out. And Nova, actually speaking of sort of Nova bringing in people, he's actually the one to bring in Aegis, the new character. So he's during the battle, he's kind of thrown from the battlefield and lands in, I think, Brooklyn it was. And Aegis finds him, and Nova brings him back to help them fight Blastar. And then he joins the team along with everybody else. He and Bolt are the first new warriors for this volume. So Speedball did try a bunch of former New Warriors and even some people that never were New Warriors to try and create this team. Everywhere he's going, everybody's like, nah, I'm good. So he's kind of starting to feel like, well, maybe this isn't going to work out. And then they kind of get the phone call from Gene Tech, the company, the science company there from the first series. They accidentally bring Blastar into this dimension, and the New Warriors come help them out. We're already seeing some firefighter related themed things going on. Turbo, before the big battle, she helps take out a fire. And this actually becomes a thread for the next batch of issues that we're going to be covering, these first five issues, with this sort of like arson attempt. And she actually ends up helping, but that'll be another issue. Any other thoughts about this issue?
Great start. It was a great start to me. I was very hopeful once the series got going that we were going to have a long run of exciting issues. I think, Corey, as we talked about a little bit before, that obviously Jay had plotted, he had started to, you could see him start to put in some of these subplots, for especially for some of the newer characters and overall for the team, some bigger complicated issues that didn't really get to get sussed out, as we know, down the road, because we only lasted 10 issues for this. But it was a great start and a lot of hopes, and a lot of things were set up rather well. And it was great to have the New Warriors back. And here I was as a Nova fan getting to buy a Nova comic and a New Warriors comic. And it was great. Costume controversy aside, and I know that we certainly back in the day, I know a number of us complained about it enough, but it made sense. Doug, it was a really good point. It made sense for the issue and the where Nova was at mentally, where Rich was at in his head, and like, hey, if we're making these changes, I can change too. And so he did. So at the end of the day, it becomes not a big deal in the grand scheme of Nova history for this costume change. But pretty cool. Pretty cool start, right, Doug?
Yeah, and one thing, especially when going back to read it again, is you see a real respect on Jay's part for continuity. He's, you know, acknowledging things that happened and building off of those instead of saying, oh, well, I've got a brand new team and I'm not going to reference everything before it. So that's one of those continuity guys. I really do appreciate when a writer makes that effort to kind of bring those elements still in. So yeah, really good issue overall.
Yeah, you can tell that there's a real affection for these characters and these stories and the first series in particular. And it is neat to see him kind of pick up that thread.
Yeah, to have a writer who's a fan kind of like us and who's talented enough to go write some stories and get paid for them and set things up. And into that, what Doug was talking about in continuity, in it, Nova, for Rich Rider, we already know he's got a complex history because he's been around the longest. So he's had different personality elements, you know, focused on different issues, from inexperience in his first run to anger issues, you know, somewhat in New Warriors and in his second volume. So he's got a little bit of all that. Rich Rider that we see in Zero and Number One has elements of everything we've seen from Rich Rider. So, you know, he's, you know, calm and insecure and sometimes, and other times you see his anger show up as he yells at Blastar. He doesn't like being called Young Pup, by the way. Don't call Rich Rider Young Pup because he'll react angrily. So anyway, so you have this complex history with all these characters, and it was handled really well, I thought, especially again, since we're a little bit Nova focused, that he did a great job with Rich Rider. It was perfect. It was perfect Rich Rider to me.
Yeah, he definitely felt like he's got the characters' voices and the motivations and everything like that. I mean, I think if I remember right, I think when the series was originally sort of pitched, the book had a different editor, and then that editor left Marvel. And by the time the first issue came out, now it was under Bobby Chase. And so I think, and I could be misremembering things, but I believe that that's right. And that sort of, you know, Bobby Chase was kind of stuck with a book that she never really asked for or wanted. And so I think there's some pulling and pushing in different directions by the creative team and the editorial team. But despite that, things are surfacing that are really enjoyable. And this first issue is a really great step. And Don, I like too how you mentioned that Nova and the Nova series and the New Warrior series, like that, the two books were running concurrently again since for the first time since the mid-90s. And I remember having that feeling as well, that sort of excitement of like, oh, they're building it back up. Because the New Warriors really were sort of a mini franchise at one point in the 90s. So it really did feel like we're growing back up again, where, you know, the characters are getting some love again. And so it was an exciting time.
And a reminder for new listeners, or if someone had missed what we talked about, what happened to Nova Volume 3, it's a very volatile time when Corey's talking about all these editor changes, where it sounds like we're making excuses for the series. And it was very, people were coming and going at a great rate, where editors are being fired or quitting, new ones are coming on, going back and forth to DC, because Marvel is still recovering financially from bankruptcy, and they kind of don't know, no one knows really week to week what they're going to be able to afford to publish, who they're going to be able to afford to pay. So it was a really tough time to try to make comics, because you didn't, you know, so there's other reasons why maybe we only got to 10 issues, and it's not all on the creative team for sure, because they really were supported by the Nova fans and New Warrior fans of the time. Best, you know, 30,000 units is pretty good, especially when you consider how comic sales have kind of fallen off since then. 30,000 to 35,000 readers every month was actually pretty good.
We're talking about the two series, and I think that is really a a real credit to both creative teams, Eric Larson and Jay Ferber, that they worked so closely to get their series in sync.
Agreed.
Yes, absolutely. So let's look at issue number two. Now, at the time this was released, Marvel had this kind of program, this like marketing program, where that the second issue would have two covers. So they got Derek Robertson to draw the variant cover, a great cover, probably my favorite of the series. So yeah, so the second issue begins with them basically, okay, we're a team now. How are we going to pay for this? Nightthrasher was also among the people who rejected Speedball's invitation. But in the interim, they're sort of like, well, now what? And so they debate it and decide Namorita should go ask her cousin, Namor the Submariner, for some of that undersea riches to keep them afloat. And while she goes to do that, she gets targeted by an unexpected villain from the second half of the first volume. We have Genocide and her eugenics group. Yeah, this is a group that Firestar ran into previously. And they are sort of a kind of pure genetic purists, I guess. But they target Namorita, and then of course the team comes and helps her out. But this sort of reveals or expands on some new powers that she had exhibited in the previous issue, where suddenly she sort of has this camouflage ability now. She has this like acid touch. You know, she's getting some of these sort of aquatic creature based powers, the clone history that she has as well, and sort of her genetic instability. So, which also tied into her losing that blue look that she did in Nova. So again, Jay's picking up a lot of threads and tying them in together and kind of making for just like a fun kind of action comic along with it. Meanwhile, Speedball is getting an internship at the soap opera that his mother works at, and Chris Bradley Bolt this is a thread that actually I was kind of fascinated by at the time. He arrived in New York City just without a home. He's no place to stay. Again, is a thread that'll be kind of addressed throughout this run. And then we also get Aegis kind of learning. He's the newest hero here, and he's kind of learning his way and trying to figure out his place on the team as well. So what did you guys think of this issue?
Again, I think they had done a good job building from the first couple of issues. Relationships are getting a little more complex. I liked Aegis a lot. I liked Bolt a lot. I liked the chemistry with the characters a lot. I think they had made it, Jay had made it really, everybody kind of interesting in their own way. And of course, in the Nova fandom stuff, when he gets to the great, they have a three panel page, two little panels up top, mostly splash page when the Warriors show up to back up Nita, you know, and Rich gets to do the, you know, put her down now, right? You know, gets to be tough guy, you know. So we have drama, we have a good Rich Rider moment. It's lots of action, lots of character development. I like the art. I liked kind of the brighter colors from, you know, some of the muddier stuff that had been from the previous era of comics. Pretty good book. Pretty good buildup. And what's, you know, one of those things when you say, did they do their homework? And yes, they bring in a villain from volume one, and we get to show how our team is working together. I like the whole thing. Again, I was having a blast reading this when it came out at the time. So I had fun every month waiting for the new issue. And this is another good one. So not bad, Doug. What was your take?
Yeah, I liked it. I do like, you know, when Rich and Turbo are on the roof talking about being in school, there's the reference that Rich is working his way through school and that he became a film major. So I enjoy that. And like you said, Don, he got to have his big blow the walls in moment too. And I just like that human element too of, you know, how are we going to, you know, pay for everything? So I really enjoyed that as well. So yeah, good issue.
You know, it's kind of a lost art, I think, which you don't see in a lot of modern comics. It depends. It depends on the writer. It depends on the book today. But a lost art that Jay, I thought, handled really well is the day in the life moments mixed in with the action moments. Today, you kind of get either a full talking heads kind of a story that moves along that way, or you get a full action story, but rarely can someone mix in the elements and it makes sense and it feels right. And you're still driving the overall plot forward to have, you know, when to have those loft moments, to have those on the roof moments, to have those character conversations, it's a great mix. And the mix is kind of that lost art, I think, sometimes these days.
Yeah, that's a great point. I think Jay, from what he's said in interviews, is particularly around this time, like he was really kind of into soap operas at the time, and the structure of soap operas lends itself really well to comic books and sequential storytelling or serialized storytelling rather, because of the way that they juggle subplots and narratives and you know, different character focuses and things like that. So he is really good at that. That's a great point. It really does, like this issue, which was not as long as the first issue, like that, like you said, Don, that first issue was sort of a giant sized issue. This is a conventional 22 page ish, you know, story. And we get forward movement on every character, plus a great fight scene, you know, a great action scene. So yeah, absolutely agreed. And, you know, Steve Scott continues to do great. Like, I love how expressive his art is.
Yes, I agree. Well said. It's all the faces, all the characters, body language, the way the characters carry themselves. Yeah, it's very expressive.
So issue 3, New Warriors number 3, Derek Robertson now, I believe, is just becoming the regular cover artist at this point. And this, we focus more in on Aegis in this issue. This kind of goes into sort of his community and his friendships from his school and neighborhood. Basically, there is a gang element here where there's these two gangs, and one of them has a member that is killed. He's a high school friend that is killed by a drive-by shooting, and then one of the friends asks Aegis to get involved, and so it's kind of neat because Aegis really, before joining the New Warriors, he's become this kind of neighborhood hero. So the community that he comes from all basically already knows him and feels like he's kind of like their hero. And so they approach him and ask him to help them out. And he asks the New Warriors to help him. But unfortunately, things get a little tense when they try to de-escalate the gang conflict. And Aegis recognizes one of the gang members and ends up, when the building starts collapsing, he ends up saving the gang member rather than Turbo or his teammate. And that creates problems that actually kind of linger throughout the rest of the series. Meanwhile, Turbo is following up on that arson attempt from the first issue and meets a character who becomes important throughout this kind of first thread here, Dalton Beck. And they kind of, there's a little bit of flirtation there too. So Turbo's, it's kind of funny actually, Turbo's getting everybody hitting on her. Speaking of hitting on, Namorita runs into the Human Torch and they start hitting on each other too and kind of making little doe eyes at each other, and the press nearby likes it and they like the attention, and so they kind of start hitting it off. Yeah, I think that's kind of all the major things that happen in this issue. This is actually Steve Scott's last issue, sadly. About halfway through, an artist takes over, actually more than halfway, about halfway actually. It is Chris Renaud, but he about halfway through takes over as the artist. And this kind of begins a little bit of a struggle for the book, finding a new regular artist. Yeah, Chris kind of takes over about halfway through the fight, big fight scene, in fact, which kind of noticeable. Even so, good issue. We see also Namorita catches up with Namor, asks for that money, basically, and sounds like he agrees. Yeah, I think that's kind of all the major things. Oh, I'm sorry. Bolt was actually the one that was caught in the collapse of the building, not Turbo. I don't know why I thought it was Turbo. But this sort of tension, of course, Aegis doesn't explain that the gang member that he ended up saving is somebody he knows. And so they just think like, what are you doing helping the villains, basically, from the New Warriors' perspective? But yeah, so this kind of creates a rift between Aegis, the newcomer, and the rest of the team. So what did you think about this issue?
Yes, art change, that's kind of a bummer. It's a bit disjointed, totally different colorist from the month before, or at least different look, or maybe a different printer. Like we said, Marvel is in a very volatile area at this point. So people are coming and going. There's a lot of books at that time. Nova, Avengers, a lot of these series were struggling to keep creative teams together and consistent. So, but despite all that, some great panels, some great action scenes. And yes, I would say maybe not my favorite issue of all the others so far as we get to number 3, but still a strong entry into New Warriors history, I think, overall. What'd you think, Doug?
You know, a couple things I noticed about this one is with Aegeus, he almost fills the Night Thrasher role in because he has all these street neighborhood issues that the warriors get involved in that are the more, like I say, street level kind of grounded type of situations that they were originally formed to fight. But I like the character that he has, that mythical chest plate artifact that he has. I mean, that's going to open up, you know, a whole lot of potential possibilities that we'll see a little bit further in the series.
Yeah, I don't know necessarily whether they were trying, but in this particular case, though, I think Dwayne was the big brother before, and Thrash was the big brother, and in this case, Aegis is the little brother for Rich in that dynamic where Rich is trying to look out for him. And so you got a guy that can look out for himself that doesn't necessarily want a big brother or and know of himself. So yes, it does set up some natural tension, but I think it's definitely a different dynamic, at least to me, than it was with Thrash, because Thrash was kind of the more experienced of the two, I thought, at least it always came off to me, at least that Thrash was more overall, not just street smart, but experience smart compared to Rich. So in this case, Rich now is the does that make any sense? Do you guys see what I'm trying to say?
Yeah.
That's a good point. Yep.
Yeah. I agree. I mean, I think there is some overlap, but it's sort of almost like taking that dynamic and shifting it, you know, shifting it 60 degrees or something there. Doug, as you were talking, you actually made me kind of realize that this issue has sort of shades of the first series' second issue, where it's kind of spotlighting on Night Thrasher. It's also street, you know, that sort of like street level kind of vibe to it. And it also has Night Thrasher kind of separated from the team. It's not the same dynamic, but there is an overlap in the sort of tension there. It's kind of interesting. And also pulling, again, Jay's really pulling themes from, I mean, this is not a copy of those stories, but it's pulling themes from them and using them in different ways. It's kind of neat. One thing I forgot to mention was at the end of the issue, I always imagine this happening at the next issue, but it's at the end of this issue. The fight with the gang ends. The New Warriors go back to their base, the crash pad, and then the gang follows them to their headquarters and blows the place up. And so this is their headquarters from way back in New Warriors. You know, I can't remember when they started going to the crash pad, around the second year or something like that. They lost their headquarters, and so we'll now in issue number 4, they have to, one, get out of the exploding building and then find out, well, now what? This issue, we have a guest artist, Carl Kerschel, who is a great artist. Carl Kerschel seems a little rushed here, but he goes on to do some amazing stuff. Carl Kerschel has this wonderful webcomic called The Abominable Charles Christopher, which is this kind of snow-themed webcomic that's beautifully illustrated and very funny and has shades of Calvin and Hobbes and Pogo and things like that. And it's really wonderful. Anyway, this here predates that, but I always kind of remembered his name from this issue. But anyway, the New Warriors escape their crash pad exploding, and the gang members kind of still there, the ones that blew the place up. They used some high-tech weaponry to blow it up, and Aegis grabs one of them, and it's the same member that he had saved from the previous issue. This is James, a friend of his, and kind of angry at his friend for being in this gang, but he also feels loyalty to his friend. And so he's like, well, you know, what are we going to do here? And his friend's like, well, you just got to let me go. I'm leaving. But Aegis doesn't want to hurt his friend. The New Warriors are standing right over there. So he basically just lets his friend punch him out. He just tells him, he's like, well, we've got to make this look like you escaped and I tried to stop you. And so the New Warriors are kind of like, oh, don't you have a force field that would have saved you from that? You know, so there's a lot of trust issues now starting to form between Aegis and the rest of the team. Namorita returns from Atlantis, sees the base in ruins, and Dalton Beck happens upon the scene. There's a big fire. New York's arson investigator shows up, and we learn that he is connected to Silvermane, who is a Spider-Man villain, probably most prominently from the 80s, I guess, sort of a mobster-related character. So that opens up some interesting implications about Dalton Beck and his growing relationship with Turbo. Meanwhile, the New Warriors track down the gun supplier of the gang. James did give them that information. So Aegis kind of uses that. Like, well, I did learn something, so I'm not a total screw up. And they get there and there is a supervillain team waiting for them. So Aegis wonders, has my friend sold me out? Unbeknownst to Turbo or the rest of the New Warriors, one of the team members of the supervillain team is Dalton Beck in Blackwing, I think is the name. And they are a little bit overwhelmed by the team here that they're fighting against. They sort of weren't expecting this. They pull through, but they do capture the arms dealer here and turn him in. And then Namorita goes on a date with the Human Torch. They have a great time and share a kiss. Ooh. And that's kind of the issue. You know, Dalton Beck then gives them a new headquarters, which is a firehouse, more fire-themed things going on, even though Steve Scott sadly is no longer with the series. They sort of follow up on the gang there. And this has always kind of been an ambiguous ending to me here. So they go to basically this house where James is, and they try and kind of like force this growing tension between these two gangs, and they try to kind of de-escalate things. And it doesn't work out too well. One of the other gang members is shot, and the shooter is James, and he runs. And that's kind of it. And they're just sort of like, well, geez, now what? So Aegis finally just doesn't know what else to do. And so he reveals his secret identity, and he explains, like, James is a friend of mine. This is why I have been trying to protect him. James had saved his life at a drive-by years ago before Trey Rollins had become Aegis. And so he feels this loyalty to him. And so it kind of ends there with them, you know, sort of understanding his predicament, but not really sure what to do with the gang tension here that hasn't really been de-escalated because now one of them was just shot. What did you guys think of this issue?
I liked it. I think Carl Kerschel, clearly a talented artist, clearly up against some deadlines because it's some pretty simple line work and we still have our same inker. While Wong seems to be using a heavier line, maybe it was looser pencils. So it almost kind of comes off as a very animated style compared to some of the, it's almost like its own unique look and almost unique comic. Almost if you had read the last issue, is it the same, you know, series? So it was a little jarring, I think, as far as the changes go. The cover for me, art wise, Derek Robertson's Human Torch Nita cover against the Empire State Building. That's a great cover. It's one of the, like an instant classic, I think. And so obviously, you know, Human Torch's flames in the shape of a heart. And I don't know if it came out on Valentine's Day or what, but we definitely have some romantic notions there. And story-wise, we like our team to be versatile. They could take on cosmic heroes or villains like Blastar, and then they can do street level down in the alleys, you know, gang kind of stuff to help the everyday person, which is kind of one of the things New Warriors do is they'll clean up stuff that the Avengers might overlook. So in that theme, I like how the story went there. Silvermane's an interesting inclusion into the villain mix for the New Warriors. But overall, yeah, I'd say overall pretty good issue. What'd you think, Doug?
Yeah, like what you said about the cover, that is just a fantastic cover. But you're right about the art. It's quite the change. I think in some ways, maybe that clean sort of animated style, as you called it, Don, may have hurt the impact of the story a little bit since it's such a street level type of, I guess you would say, I would almost expect more of that grittier style of art for something like that. I think maybe some of the elements may have lost a little bit of their impact because of that. But I did like the Human Torch Namorita scenes. Those are really nice. But overall, yeah, good issue. I think we're building to a head on the James and the whole gang activity.
So what do we think of Nova here so far as we're going to cover one more issue, but just looking through kind of this fight scene and everything, I remember one conversation that came up was at the time that these issues were being released was sort of like, who's the leader? You know, there's no real one leader of the team, but Namorita and Nova were definitely the primary drivers of the team, I would say at this point. You know, what do you guys think of that?
Yeah, I think that's a fair point. And I don't know that based on our New Warriors history and kind of the revolving leadership where Nova had at one point in time a stronger leadership role, stronger leadership voice, and Thrash has had that voice, Vance has had that voice, Nita has certainly taken charge at certain times. But, you know, what's kind of interesting is that Speedball had kind of put things together. So I was kind of expecting to see more of Speedball taking some of that mantle more often in this particular issue, because I think Rich is being written well in that he's still distracted by a lot of things that was either going on in his series or going on with his relationships or lack of relationships. So for him to sometimes be in charge and sometimes not sure, or letting other people step up or trying to babysit Aegis, you know, so he had some leadership elements. But, you know, I wasn't bothered. I thought, like I said, I thought this whole series that Jay had Rich's voice down. He had his situations down. And his reactions, all of his reactions fit to me. I wasn't one going, geez, why isn't Rich stomping on everybody and taking over? I thought everything made sense. It fit for me. Did it work for you, Doug?
Yeah, it sure does. And the reason being is I think it continues those steps of evolution that we see in Rich from series to series to series. And even his comments to Turbo earlier about being a film major, but he doesn't know what he wants to do. And I think that's reflected even here, as Corey was pointing out about who's the leader of the team. Whereas I think, obviously, due to events that will happen to Rich much later, he would have been the natural leader. But here, I think where he's still getting that, he had some taste of leadership in Volume 1, but I also think he's at a point now of, I'm really not sure where I want to be. I'm not 100% sure I want to be on this team, because it seemed to take a lot to convince him to be there. And sometimes maybe I read too much into it, but it sometimes seems to me that Rich didn't necessarily, well, his whole heart wasn't into the team completely. It was, this is something for me to do until I can be an Avenger or I can decide what I'm going to do. But his thinking is, as long as I'm here, I'm going to fight the fight. I expect everybody else to be committed to the team. But I think that might be why we don't see him necessarily taking that step as the full leader of the team. And like you said, Corey, I don't think we see anybody that necessarily is grabbing the reins of it. It's almost leadership by committee at this point. But like you were saying, Don, I think Speedball is, I don't know if even he would want to be a leader. I think to him, it's more important to have the team, to have that family, but he doesn't necessarily want to lead it. So it's an interesting thing that you brought up, Corey. So again, I like the way the whole thing is developing, and it's all good.
Yeah, I like too that it is kind of a shifting dynamic. You know, I think it is kind of a natural thing for these friends who've been working together for so long now to do that, to kind of trade off. Yeah, where sometimes Nova's stepping in and, you know, he's got a strong opinion about something, and so he's going to give his input. And then other times it's Namorita, and they all have a voice, but they don't, you know, it just depends on kind of their experience level as to how much they kind of push it.
But one thing I do think it also presents is, even if you're doing a leadership by committee type of thinking, I think it shows the family element of the New Warriors, at least among the core. They've been through so much, and there's that trust and love between them. Nobody's stepping on anybody's toes. If one starts taking that leadership role, they're all right behind that person. And I think that's shown how they've grown since Volume 1. So I just wanted to throw that out.
Yeah, no, that's a really good throw out because I think really, you know, it kind of rotated in Volume 1 and it kind of rotates here. And it is why, because that sense of family, why did Speedball want to rebuild the team? He missed his family. So yeah, that's absolutely a bunch of people that feel this togetherness, and egos aside, it kind of shows that, you know, they're willing to go in whatever direction that they need. And they are more of a family than they are trying to, anyone ego saying, hey, I've got to be in charge here. I'm the only one who can figure this out. So it's more than just a little throw. I think you capture on one of the cool things that makes the New Warriors the New Warriors.
And I mean, that's a great point too, because Namorita and Nova were mad at each other when the series started. And even though they're not you know, super chummy, they respect each other enough to have that push and pull of like, okay, you're stepping up. Okay. You know? And so, yeah, I mean, that's a great point. And I think you're absolutely right. And I think too, Doug, I think you're right about Nova kind of, he was lukewarm about it. I mean, I think actually both of them were in the beginning in that first issue. Speedball invited them initially and they both were like, nah, I got other things to do. No, thanks. You know, we kind of hang out and check in like this, but not interested. And then of course the Blast Star fight happens and they kind of are convinced, particularly Nova, like you say, because of his solo series, what he had going on. But at this point, with this issue coming out, issue 4, his solo series has now ended. So issue Nova volume 3, number 7 came out. That's the last issue. So now Nova is only appearing in this issue. And as we'll see beyond the next episode, we cover the next batch of issues, we'll see him sort of more sort of subplots be picked up by Nova because of that. Right now, he's a strong presence in the book, but there's not a lot of like subplot development for him other than like his tension with Aegis and his relationships with the other characters. All right, issue 5. So this will be the last one for this episode. So this was a little bit of a crossover. So Generation X, a spinoff of the X-Men starting in, I think, 1993. And Jay Ferber was writing both books at this point. He's writing Generation X and New Warriors. And he actually started writing Generation X first and then got the New Warriors book. And this one, to me, feels like the beginning of Jay shifting to a little bit more self-contained stories. This is really kind of about this sort of team up with Generation X. Basically, the arms dealer has a son who happens to go to the Massachusetts Academy, which is the school that Generation X team goes to as well. It's kind of the modern day Xavier school. And he goes to that school as a human student, no mutant powers. He's just a human student. He learns about his father being arrested by the New Warriors. He blames the New Warriors, goes to his father's lab to get some weapons to get revenge, kind of breaks one of the weapons, and that turns him into this big radioactive glob monster. And then he kind of goes on a rampage, and Generation X and New Warriors kind of happen to come together, team up, and arrest him. At the same time, we've got more subplots brewing. There's this Iron Fist thread, which seems totally random at the time, but does come together. There is the Steel Serpent is sort of, I'm not super strong on Iron Fist lore, but Steel Serpent is a character within Iron Fist's corner of the universe. He's been captured by this young kid called Muto, I think his name is. But anyway, this kid is kind of going around trying to steal everybody's mystical powers, all the powers that are tied to the Iron Fist. And so that character is established there. And the artist, we've got Carl Kerschel again, and Chris Renaud is back. Chris Renaud had sort of pitched in on the second half of Steve Scott's last issue. Carl Kerschel was sort of presented as the guest artist of last issue. And now we put both of them together in this one issue, kind of splitting the art duties again. We also get Nova related. We get them using a shuttle from the orbiting Nova Corps ship. This was, again, a plot thread left from the first New Warriors series. At the end of that series, when Rich Rider regains his Nova powers, he gets it from Garth and Saul, who had been stationed Earth orbit in that, I guess, space station or spaceship. And Nova, that we now learn, has sort of moved in there. He sort of has access to it. We also see that Nemrita has discovered that Chris Bradley is homeless, and she offers for him to move into her place. And they kind of have a nice bonding moment. Turns out that this issue was released in December of 1999. And so we have a nice little feel-good Christmas moment at the end. So what do you guys think about this issue?
Well, again, we've got the jarring art changes where we got Carl Kerschel doing like most of the first half and Chris Renaud doing the second half. I thought Chris's artwork fit a little bit closer to what Scott had done in his earlier issues when they shared an issue together. It's a little closer to kind of how we started. Nothing against, you know, we've obviously figured out Carl's pretty darn good artist, pretty talented artist. It just that style was just, it's different enough that it was jarring to look at it, you know, page to page. Also, in some we talked about in the previous issue, some of Nova's inconsistent behaviors. He was really inconsistent in this issue, I thought. Some of his, you know, instead of being more of a leader, big brother for Aegis, he's kind of a, I don't know, almost angry bully a little bit to begin with in his anger towards Aegis. And then his behavior during the battle where Aegis suddenly being the wise younger guy says, hey, maybe we shouldn't be fighting these guys. But Rich is now Rich is mad. So we're going to have a fight. And so he was his temper and temperament and character was, you know, maybe as mixed up as Rich had been. You know, we had talked about his not quite sure what he wanted, whether he wanted to be a team. But he was a little bit all over the place, kind of like the art. And overall, an entertaining issue. I thought it was kind of neat that Jay got to bring in both of his teams together. Yeah, in all, entertaining. Again, the art, the pencil dance that haunted the series. We're in five issues. We've had three or four different artists, right? So we've had Steve Scott, we've had Chris Renaud, we've had Carl Kershaw. At least three people working on five books and a zero issue. So it's, you'd like to see a little bit of consistency and so you don't get pulled out of the story to go, hey, that looks really different than the Nita I saw two pages ago, right? So, but overall, I was happy with it. Anytime, like I said, and you can get a New Warriors issue as a New Warriors fan is a good thing. It's a positive thing. What'd you think, Doug?
You know, I agree. It Nova's portrayal is a bit inconsistent. It's, you know, by this point, I think we kind of expected him not to jump into a situation without thinking and letting his anger dictate his actions. So you're right, that did feel a bit inconsistent. I loved the shuttles. I just thought that was fantastic. Anything that references the Nova starships and stuff like that, it shows that, you know, there is some, that's bringing in elements that seem like they're small things, but it feels like it's opening their world some. It's like, okay, here's the shuttles. Here's a reminder that we can go cosmic when we want to. Yeah, the blob monster. When I was first reading that whole storyline with the gangs and they had the powerful weapons and stuff, at first I'm going, oh, how's a gang going to really have hold of that kind of stuff? But then when you think about a superhero universe that has all these different races and all the invasions that have happened and all the attacks, and even on Earth, you've got so much high tech with Reed Richards and Tony Stark, and the list goes on and on. It does make sense that eventually that tech is somehow going to find its way to the streets and they're going to have issues. And there's going to be accidents like in this issue that ends up resulting in a giant blob monster. So at first I thought the team up with Gen X seemed a little out of the blue and it didn't seem like it fit so well. But the fact that Jay was writing both teams, I think it works fine. Nobody seemed completely out of character except maybe Rich. But overall, yeah, it was a fun issue as in terms of a, you know, like a single story.
Yeah, I think of this batch that we're covering, this may be the weakest issue. The art inconsistency, the stylistic inconsistency, I think hurts it. I think there's two kind of things about this issue that to me also, like as far as story-wise, like you could remove Generation X entirely and just have the son of the arms dealer just go to literally any school in the world. And the story would be fine. You know, like it's fun to see them together and it's neat to have them team up and things like that. But story-wise, the Generation X team didn't really have to be there. And then you probably could take this whole issue out of the whole series and go from issue 4 and issue 6. And, you know, there's not much missed here, you know? So to me, it was kind of, I wouldn't say it's filler because it is pulling on threads that had come and is continuing some things. The tension between Aegis and Nova is continuing. Nova is very angry this issue. I think he's just really mad. His solo series got canceled.
It's definitely some residual anger. Yeah.
yeah. But yeah, I mean, it's fun. And, you know, there's a long comic book history of muck monsters that this is continuing that I like. I like that sort of bit of it. Character actually does show up again. It was fine. You know, the other issues are stronger. This was, I wouldn't call it bad, but it was just kind of like, okay, cool. And ready for the next one.
Yeah. I just wonder if it wasn't maybe a editorial driven or marketing driven one. It's like, okay, our numbers are sliding. Jay's working on an X book, which has just a huge following. Let's see if we can't get some X readers over here and maybe boost things up a little bit.
Yeah, I mean, these things were, you know, they always have three issues in the can before another issue comes out. I don't know if there was a lot of thought on whether things would be sliding or not, but maybe Jave getting some vibes from editorial that, you know, they weren't getting a lot of loving support. So as Corey suggested before, maybe instead of being able to stick to some of those really cool subplots and complex stories that Jay was trying to build on from the beginning, sensing, hey, I'm kind of running out of time here. Maybe we got to change this to some one and done kind of element stories and work the subplots a little slower. Maybe there's still lots of factors going on. If you're a writer and you're going, hey, your artist isn't getting done, so we need to add somebody else. Hey, this artist can only help out for a couple of days, so we're going to bring on this artist. And oh, by the way, you know, so he's working in a pretty volatile environment to try to generate a story to entertain us. So yes, I agree with both you guys that maybe this isn't the strongest. Number five isn't the strongest of what we've seen so far. 1 through 4 were a lot stronger. Totally agree with that. But I think given the elements of what these guys are working with, it's still, you know, an entertaining New Warriors story. And maybe I'm just too grateful to have another New Warriors comic in my hand at that time, and I'm more forgiving. Definitely not the best, but I understand why.
So with issue 5, we're now halfway through volume 2 of New Warriors. So what do we think? One, what do we think of Nova's depiction as it's progressed so far, and just the book overall?
Overall, I'd say I've addressed whatever concerns about the costume. And as a sneak peek to the next time that we do the next couple issues of this New Warriors volume, here's a spoiler alert. He gets his old costume back. So it's not a big deal anymore. But overall, it's great to have the New Warriors back. I love the new team. I love the new characters, even the controversial Aegis or whatever, you know, because he's a tension builder in the team, and he's doing his role rather well. I wish, obviously, we all wish that the art could be a little more consistent. Issues 1 through 4 are great. The zero issue is a lot of fun from Wizard. And yeah, we stumble a little bit with number 5. But my overall take halfway through is so glad to have the New Warriors back in action.
Yeah, I think overall this first half, I think it had its feet actually from issue 0. I mean, it's not one of those, we'll just make it up as we go. I think Jay had a pretty good plan of how he wanted to start this thing out, and it worked well. I think I really like the way he brought the team back together. In terms of Nova's portrayal, it's, I think, a good portrayal for where he was in his career at that point. And I think it showed that Jay worked with Eric really well. You know, maybe he would have done Nova differently if Eric's series hadn't been going on. It shows that Jay worked really hard, I think, to make both versions work so that readers, you know, like us who are reading both aren't going, you know, I'm getting taken out of it because Rich isn't being written the same. I think there's a lot of effort to make him work in both books. I think we see that Jay likes Nova. And I think as a team, I like the way everybody was portrayed in the New Warriors this time around. I think we're seeing everybody be consistent to how they've been. Gia's is an interesting character and I think had a whole lot of potential. So I really like the team. I like where it's going. So yeah, the first half, again, other than maybe issue 5, I think we have a good run going.
I think this issue or the series, you know, when you look at the subsequent solo series, you know, the next volume, the volume after that, it's much more of a jarring sort of acclimation into the style and the themes and things like that. This really feels like a continuation of volume 1. It just feels like, okay, there was a pause and we're continuing now. And, you know, that could have been just sort of the way the industry was at the time versus how it evolved over the next, you know, couple decades. But yeah, I mean, Jay's love of these characters is evident. His deep knowledge of the lore that he's working with and building up with it rather than just sort of circling the drain with it. You know, he's creating new ideas from these things and the voices feel authentic. Yeah, I mean, it was exciting. It was an exciting time. The artist issues were frustrating at the time and it definitely impacted the voice of the book. Doug, I think you made a great point about Carl Kerschel, who is an excellent artist, but was probably not a good fit for that issue four. And the series does get its feet back under it later on. So this first half kind of starts strong, gets a little wobbly. And then as we get into the second half of this series, they do find a regular artist who is great. And the book really kind of gets its feet under itself. I was very happy with this kind of with this return, and was really just sad it didn't last longer, but it was a neat team to have. It was neat to have the New Warriors grow with these two new members. I also loved Bolt and Aegis. I thought they added great dynamics to the team, and yeah, it was a fun series.
And that's where we'll end things for this episode. I want to thank Don and Corey again for their insight and time. Thanks, guys.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Final thoughts.
Well, that brings us to the end of this episode of Xandar Radio. I hope you enjoyed it, and I look forward to receiving your feedback. Send your comments as a voice message, and it may be played in a future episode. And of course, you're always welcome to send an email to xandarradio@gmail.com or leave a post at the Xandar Radio Facebook page. All avenues can be reached at novaprimepage.com/podcasts.asp. I'd like to extend a very big thank you to Don Lund and Corey Blake for another fun roundtable session. Now for the answer to the Nova trivia question. The answer is Eve Bakyan Nova was able to give people the abilities of a Nova Corps member with a Nova Star. The Nova Star was a small, star-shaped piece of Xandarian technology which would create a Nova suit for the recipient, and it contained the powers of a Nova. Thank you for taking time to listen to the program today. The next episode of Xandar Radio will be released in May with the latest Nova news, fun features, and a new Studio 64 session. Until then, have a blue blazing day.
This is the World Mind. I am taking back control from my human host. Xandar Radio is a Studio 64 production of the Nova Prime page. This program is the property of Doug Smith. Nova and other characters mentioned are trademarks of Marvel Characters, Incorporated. All rights reserved. Music heard in the program is by Chad Crouch. A link to his site and the license can be found at novaprimepage.com.